from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. On Friday, the Washington Post reported on CIA assessments that Russian government hackers had, in fact, interfered in the U.S. presidential election in support of Donald Trump. Yesterday, President-elect Trump called the reports ridiculous.
They have no idea if it's Russia or China or somebody. It could be somebody sitting in a bed someplace.
We'll talk to NPR's Mary Louise Kelly, former U.S. Ambassador to Russia Michael McFaul, and a former CIA agent about Russia and the election, and Donald Trump's leading candidate for Secretary of State, an oil executive with close ties to Vladimir Putin. Join us for Forum. It's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Russian government hacking of the U.S. election was aimed at electing Republican Donald Trump, not just undermining the American electoral system. That's the conclusion of U.S. intelligence officials, according to a report by The Washington Post on Friday. President-elect Trump dismissed the revelation yesterday on Fox News, saying it was motivated by Democrats making excuses for losing the election. And meanwhile, Trump is reportedly considering an oil executive with close ties to Russian leader Vladimir Putin as his Secretary of State. Joining us to talk about these developments are Mary Louise Kelly, who's with us from Washington, D.C., national security correspondent for National Public Radio. Mary Louise Kelly, welcome to Forum. Good morning.
Thank you. Very glad to be with you.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have Michael McFaul back on Forum, director of the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford and also former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Welcome, Michael McFaul.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you. And Mary Louise Kelly, let me begin with you, and let's get the picture here of what we are talking about. I mean, it appears to be the CIA is saying it's quite clear that electing Trump was Russia's goal. What kind of evidence are they coming forth with?
That is the huge question, is what the evidence is. What we are told, and all of this is based on trying to figure out what the actual intelligence is, because the CIA briefing was classified. Needless to say, reporters were not in the room. We're not being allowed to look at the intelligence they have. But the CIA says that with confidence, they have concluded that Russia was trying to tip the intelligence to Trump. The evidence that officials on Capitol Hill, for example, and others who have had access to the CIA briefing, point two is, for example, that the Russian hackers got into not just Democratic institutions, not just the Democratic National Committee, but the Republican National Committee, the RNC. The RNC denies this, but a U.S. official who I spoke to who has access to the intelligence says this is something that happened, and the fact that the information from the Republican side of the aisle was not released, whereas Democratic emails, as we well know, were leaked. Help is one thing that they are pointing at. We don't know if there are also, for example, intercepts of phone conversations, other pieces of intelligence that the CIA is bringing together to try to paint a comprehensive picture of what they think exactly the Russian motives were here.
Well, in addition to dismissing this as ridiculous, Donald Trump compared it to the same people supposedly who told us that the Iraqis had weapons of mass destruction. But there is not full consensus. I mean, do we really have evidence of the Kremlin directly trying to, for example, pass on to WikiLeaks even, which is at this point almost incontrovertible? I raise this question simply because if they're trying to undermine the electoral system, it's one thing. If they're working on behalf of Donald Trump, it's very much a different thing.
You're correct in thinking that this is a very murky, very dark hall of mirrors. And again, without access to the firsthand evidence, it's really hard to say. I will say the CIA, two points. One, they will admit, absolutely true, they have gotten things wrong before. The pre-war intelligence on Iraq, which is what the Trump transition team has alluded to, was absolutely wrong. The Trump team says, look, these are the same people who brought us Saddam Hussein and his WMD. Turned out those didn't exist. That is true. CIA admits it. They will push back some, saying in the decade plus since then, many changes have been made to make the intelligence gathering and analysis more rigorous in order to prevent an intelligence disaster of that type happening again. And they say that they have confidence that in this case, the motive was to tip the election to Trump. It's something that right now, Donald Trump has access to the intelligence. He does not find it persuasive. And so you have these big investigations rolling in. President Obama, still in office until January 20th, of course, has ordered the intelligence agencies to conduct a review to look at what exactly happened this year and to go back a few campaign seasons, to go back to 2008 when it appears that both the Obama and McCain campaigns were hacked back in 2008. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, you have steam gathering for them to conduct their own investigations. Bipartisan group of senators, Republicans and Democrats, say, let's hold hearings, let's look at the evidence, let's figure out what happened here and what we can share with the American public so that Americans can consider this and make a reasonable judgment going forward.
Well, as you indicated, President Obama's ordered a full review and wants that report before he leaves office in January, on January 20th. Also, now we have Mitch McConnell stepping into this and saying,
Very,
yes, there should be bipartisan.
Yeah. The Senate Majority Leader, so top Republican in the Senate. And he said, his exact quote was, I have the highest confidence in the intelligence community and especially the Central Intelligence Agency.
And also, let me bring Michael McFaul in this. I know you were talking about the importance of actually not only bipartisan action on this, but our own Congressman Swalwell, I mean, our own meaning here in the Bay Area, has put forth a bipartisan bill called Protecting Our Democracy Act. So there's legislative action, there's action on the Hill, and there seems to be a good deal of opposition going on between Donald Trump and the CIA and Donald Trump and legislators at this point, but not necessarily with Vladimir Putin, which leads me, of course, to all of the talk that Rex W. Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil, will probably be named Secretary of State.
Well, Michael, before we get to Rex Tillerson, I want to make an important point about these various investigations. First of all, some of us have been following this for a long, long time and written about it, trying to bring attention to it during the campaign. And every time we did, it was always dismissed as some kind of partisan thing. So the elections are over now. We have a winner. Nobody is contesting that. But we really do need to have what I consider a deep dive, comprehensive, bipartisan, independent investigation of what happened here, because there's just too many unknowns. And we can't just leave it to the intelligence agencies, with all due respect to my good friends who work there. And I worked in the Obama administration. I worked with John Brennan, the head of the CIA at the White House, for many years. But that will just be a report that will die within the executive branch. By the way, I think the executive branch itself needs to be investigated. And we need to understand how they use this intelligence, and did they use it appropriately? So I support that legislation you just talked about. I think it's like a 911 commission. If you read the legislation, that is the way we're going to have a true examination of the facts. With respect to Mr. Tillerson, do you want to go there?
Back, since you made the point about the investigation, I do want to go to Mr. Tillerson, but there's been a joint statement put out, as I'm sure you're aware, bipartisan, and includes John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And they're talking about, setting up an independent investigation. At first, Mitch McConnell was somewhat adverse to that, but now he seems to be on board. What I'm wondering is, how can they make this anything other than a lengthy investigation, especially with a select committee?
I think that would be fine. I would like to take it out of the hands of hearings. I testify all the time. Hearings are great, but they're not enough. This is too big of an issue just to have a set of hearings in a very partisan setting with elected officials. It needs to be done, I believe, like the 911 commission was done.
And there's I'll chime in here. There was a lot of talk along those lines about having some sort of independent body, maybe not quite as big as the 9/11 Commission, but something along those lines? Because right now you do have these two parallel tracks. I don't think anyone believes the congressional inquiries will be remotely near wrapped up by January 20th. President Obama has said he wants his intelligence agencies to finish what they're doing by January 20th when he leaves office. But Ambassador McFaul raises a good point, which is if you want to keep this from being partisan, leaving it in the hands of Congress is probably going to complicate that. And so there is a move to see what could be done on yet a third investigation. We don't quite know how all of this will shape up.
Well, I'm also inclined to ask Ambassador McFaul about some of the big questions that he alluded to before. I mean, we have you think about Donald Trump saying, well, there's a 104-page campaign financial disclosure which talks about really all my investments. Well, it doesn't. There's a 12,000-page tax return that he claims is under audit, and the IRS says it's fine to release. There seem to be some real connections here. Remember back in 2008, Donald Trump's son, Donald Jr., said we have a disproportionate number of assets tied to Russia. And certainly the appointment of Rex Tillerson raises some eyebrows and some serious questions too about this is a man, for example, who got the 2013 Order of Friendship given to him by Russia and by Vladimir Putin. There are definitely some kind of lines that connect here, aren't there, Michael McFaul?
That's my view. And it's bigger than just the hacking of the DNC and the WikiLeaks dump, right? And I do want to point out that the reporting over the weekend for the first time has intelligence community officials saying that they now have knowledge of that transfer. That was one of the unknowns we didn't have information on before. And also, Michael, the point that you made, we also had not heard until recently about the hacking of the Republican National Committee and that information was not released. But I could ask 27 more questions about just that. And then you expand the aperture to these connections between Mr. Manafort, Mr. Page, General Flynn traveling to Moscow and sitting with President Putin during the campaign. I don't want to in any way draw preliminary conclusions to what any of that meant, but we most certainly should have an investigation of all of this, because there's never been a moment in American history where a foreign actor had this potentially this kind of impact on our election. And by the way, I want to expand the aperture beyond Russia. There's been a lot of good reporting about the production of fake news from other foreign nationals that had an impact on our election. Let's look at that as well.
We do know, however, that sanctions ended 2014 drilling project that Exxon had with Russia. We know that. We know that there have been ties between Mr. Tillerson and the Russians, and really close business ties that have been going on for years now.
And I will leap in and say that we should just inject a little bit of a note of caution in terms of Rex Tillerson. It ain't over till it's over when the Trump team finally puts out an email confirming the choice. I think he is still widely believed to be the leading candidate in Washington, and the sources close to Trump say that he may well be the pick. But there have been a lot of prominent people who have been coming and going from Trump Tower meeting, and so far none of them have been ruled out, and so far Trump is still speaking positively about, say, Mitt Romney, for example.
Yeah, Mitt Romney, who was very critical of Russia, I guess. We have that into the mix here. But let me do this. At this point, I want to invite our listeners, because I know many of you have some strong thoughts about this that you may indeed want to ventilate air on the air, and you also have some questions that you indeed probably have as well. So let me give you the toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. And you can join us now with Mary Louise Kelly, national security correspondent for NPR, and Michael McFaul, former U.S. ambassador to Russia, now director of the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford. Feel free to join the program now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. The number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also let us know your thoughts or bring any questions to the fore here by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. There could be, I guess I was intimating this before, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Mary Louise Kelly. There could be a lot of revelations to come out perhaps about some of these questions with ties to Russia if Donald Trump's tax returns were ever made public. But it seems at this point that that's highly unlikely at best. Huh?
We're getting no indication that he's planning to be forthcoming with his tax returns. He has said that he is planning his first press conference. He's not taking questions from reporters in months, and he says he's going to do his first press conference this Thursday. We're awaiting a time and what exact format that will take, but it looks like on Thursday in New York, we are hoping to get some more detail on any number of subjects. The specific subject he says he wants to take on is this issue of his business interests and what will happen to Trump International as he assumes the presidency.
Well, I want to get to callers and emailers here, but another question, Michael McFaul, about, Russians have been doing a lot of fracking, and one can assume, since you have a high oil man and a high oil executive, possibly, and I heard the caution Mary Louise Kelly raised, and it's an important one, because it may turn out to be somebody else, except maybe really Rudy Giuliani has been ruled out, but at this point, there has been, from Tillerson, support for the Paris Accord, for the Paris Agreement, I should call it, on climate change. And he's also said that he would be agreeable to a carbon tax. And he's acknowledged climate change, which Donald Trump to date has not done. So it's kind of a mixed bag on that score, isn't it?
Yes. I think Mr. Tillerson has a lot of views that we haven't really dug into. I know the ExxonMobil organization in Russia very well, of course, because when I was at the White House and an ambassador, that's when this deal was done, this $300 billion deal with Rosneft, with the largest oil company in Russia. There's no doubt about it that Rex Tillerson knows Vladimir Putin probably better than any non-U.S. government official in America, perhaps with the exception of Henry Kissinger and Steven Seagal. Those are the three that see him in a regular
basis. Who was
basis.
Recently made a Russian citizen in one of the more surreal twists of the last few weeks.
But that was a huge deal. I mean, $300 billion with the eye towards it being the largest joint venture in the history of capitalism. That's the way the ExxonMobil people used to talk about it. It was then frozen after Russia's invasion of Ukraine and annexation of Crimea. And logically, Mr. Tillerson and his team were against those sanctions because their number one partner in this deal, Igor Sechin, was put on the sanctions list as a result of that. And by the way, in response, I was put on the sanctions list in response to some of those very senior Russian officials being put on that list.
And here's a question, actually. Let me go to you on this, Mary Louise Kelly, from a listener named Frank, who says, is there any way to force the release of Trump's tax returns in order to get information about Trump's ties to Russia?
There is not that we know of. No, he's not legally bound to do it. There are decades of precedent. Every other presidential candidate from a major party has done this, but there's no mechanism to force him to do it. He, of course, has maintained that he that the IRS is looking into his taxes and he doesn't want to release anything. It's interesting because he will soon, of course, be in a position to appoint the next IRS commissioner. So a very tangled web.
And another question about tangled webs. Richard wants to know, to what extent does this story reflect a power battle between the CIA, NSA, and the FBI and other domestic security agencies? What do you think, Mary Louise?
That is a superb question. You will notice that we've been talking all along about the CIA. This is a CIA assessment as opposed to a DNI, a Director of National Intelligence estimate. The latter would involve the judgments of all 17 U.S. spy agencies. That said, the CIA remains the chief foreign intelligence agency. They are the ones looking at this. We are hearing reports, which may be what our listener is alluding to, that the FBI has considered this same intelligence and is not quite so confident that it definitely points to Russia trying to tip the election to Trump. So there are questions about why the FBI and CIA perhaps, and again, we want to be cautious because we're dealing with anonymous sources and no access to the actual hard intelligence. But one explanation that is a reasonable one to start with is that the FBI is traditionally a law enforcement agency. They have made great moves to ramp up their intelligence operations since 9/11. But at heart, they are interested in gathering evidence that could hold up beyond a reasonable doubt in court. The CIA has no such mandate. They are spies. They are interested in preventing any activity before it happens, not in prosecuting it after the fact. So they are much more likely, and in fact, it is their mission to take the same intelligence and try to make a reasoned conclusion that will allow policymakers to make decisions on what to do next. So it is not uncommon by any stretch for FBI and CIA to have a different take on these things.
Yeah, and in fact, one only thinks of 9/11 in that vein. But let me bring a caller on here. Ben joins us first. Ben, you're on.
Hey, morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. So Michael Morrow, ex-CIA, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in August where he basically said that he feels that the Russians have made Mr. Trump into an unwitting agent. And that's concerning because this could happen not in the next coming next 4 years and the elections after that as well. So it seems to me that the security agencies or the intelligence agencies aren't really taking this whole threat seriously. So my question is, given that this is the Russians doing it, are the intelligence agencies taking a more delicate approach to this? Because if this was ISIS or Al-Qaeda, we'd be all over them by now, right?
Yeah,
I'll
good.
Take my question.
Thank you for the question. Michael McFaul.
Well, again, I worked in the government for 5 years with the highest, all the people in these intelligence agencies. It's my firm view that they take this extremely seriously. How they use
it... Michael, excuse me, we have, 17 intelligence agencies at last
count? Correct, although some are more important than others. But, yeah, it's a big community. They take very seriously the Russian threat. And I would just remind your listeners, when DNC information is stolen, that is a crime as well, right? That's why the FBI was involved. When Mr. Podesta's information was stolen, that is a domestic crime as well. And that's why you get the FBI involved as well as the CIA. In terms of motives, I think it's very clear, if you look at what happened over the course of the campaign, that President-elect Trump was more sympathetic to Russian foreign policy views than Secretary Clinton. You don't need a PhD in Russian studies to come to that conclusion. If he says we should look into recognizing Crimea as part of Russia, that's a view that people in the Kremlin would prefer to deal with. And I would remind everybody that Secretary Clinton took some rather tough views against the Russians when she was Secretary of State. I think the motive is clear. I can't say that we know it for sure. But even if we don't know the motive, the consequences, I think, are pretty obvious.
Well,
the WikiLeaks data dump had a profound impact on the 2016 presidential election. And now we have, pretty strong evidence that came from Russia. And everyone should be concerned about that, including Donald Trump, by the way. And I would like to give him a little bit of credit here. I've listened very closely to all of his interviews. We all, including me, and some of the things I've said in the last 24 hours, jumped to the end of his interview. But in the beginning, he says, we don't know what happened. And that's exactly why we need a bipartisan, independent investigation so that we can know what happened.
We've got seconds left. If indeed, Mary Louise Kelly, I know we have to say goodbye to you. A listener wants to know if it's a sham of an election. Can it be redone? Is there any recourse?
At this point, that would be extremely unlikely. And I, to be honest, am not hearing calls for that from either Republicans or Democrats. They're not interested in reopening the election result. Trump will assume the presidency on January 20th. The goal here for just about everybody involved is, how do you keep this from happening again? Let's figure out what happened and stop it from happening again.
The big question indeed. Mary Louise Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. She's National Security Correspondent for NPR. We'll return. Hear more from you. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about the whole controversy that actually began on Friday with the Washington Post pointing out that there was indeed apparently hacking done, and hacking done specifically to try to bring the presidency to Donald Trump. The Russian government hacking the U.S. election was aimed at electing Republican Trump, not just undermining the American electoral system. That's the assessment of U.S. intelligence officials, according to the report that appeared on Friday in the Washington Post. We talked earlier with Louise Kelly, national security correspondent for NPR. Michael McFaul is with us, former ambassador to Russia. We're also talking about the likely, at this point, not certain, but likely appointment of Rex W. Tillerson as CEO, the presently CEO of ExxonMobil as Secretary of State. And we do want to hear from you, so you can join us either by phone. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786 or by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. I want to bring a couple more people into the discussion here, and let me tell you who is going to join us in this half hour. Glenn Carroll is actually going to talk with us briefly. He's a retired CIA officer and interrogator, and we welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
Also want to welcome Martin Lubicki, who's senior management scientist who is now a distinguished visiting professor with the U.S. Naval Academy and author of Cyberspace in Peace and War. And welcome, Martin Lubicki.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both. Actually, let me go first, if I can, to you, Glenn Carroll. I'm looking at a quote of yours about all of this new revelation, all the talk about cyber hacking, and you say it sets up one of the great crises in the history of the executive branch. All the agency can do, short of insurrection, is to present the facts when allowed to the executive we serve.
Well, yes, I'm afraid that that's not an overstatement. Any observer who deals in facts, who has observed the campaign, has seen that facts and Donald Trump don't seem to have a good relationship with one another. And the CIA, the intelligence community, serves the executive branch. We are a nonpartisan institution. And if the chief executive accepts the perspective, the arguments presented by the Russian Foreign Ministry rather than even giving a hearing to the intelligence community, that's only one subject among a host that we could talk about, foreign policy issues and executive branch issues, then that sets up a frankly existential challenge for the agency and for officers. Is how do you, you're sworn to serve the president in a nonpartisan way, and yet that becomes fundamentally, essentially impossible to do. It's a huge problem.
And Martin Lubicki, let me go to you on how do we know, because it seems at this point virtually incontrovertible from what we're reading and hearing, that indeed there was hacking and that hacking was on particularly behalf of seeing to it that Donald Trump became the president-elect as he presently is. I mean, there was a lot of talk about people who had not necessarily direct link to the Kremlin, but were somehow one step removed, and that would at least suggest plausible deniability. So just give us a sense of how the CIA made this determination from your perspective.
Well, I think we have to start off with how this story unfolded. By middle of June, it was already in the news because of private cybersecurity investigators that the DNC had been hacked and had been hacked by what was likely two agencies of the Russian government. The FSB and the GRU, I believe.
Yes.
Oddly enough, it appeared that neither of them knew that the other was in the system. It was only about a month or so later, knowing that the Russians had been in the Democratic National Committee, that the information was released to WikiLeaks, and what was initially thought to be normal intelligence gathering turned out to be an act of political action. Okay? Now, did Russian actions influence this election? The answer is undoubtedly. Okay? Was the purpose of the Russian actions to influence the election? Well, obviously, because the stuff was on WikiLeaks, it weren't simply just gathering intelligence. I think the issue is whether the Russians were making mischief for the sake of mischief, or whether the Russians were actively trying to influence the election in the direction of Donald Trump and away from Hillary Clinton. One can also debate, by the way, whether they were more interested in having Donald Trump elected or Hillary Clinton not elected. And motives are very complex things. What we do know is that all of the leaked information came from Democrats. None of it came from Republicans. And it's hard to believe that there weren't opportunities to get information for the Republicans if, in fact, the Republicans had interesting information to put out to WikiLeaks and folks like that.
Okay? Well, now we're reading that there was hacking of both the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee. But when you say undoubtedly, you base that on what specifically?
Well, I'm based on the fact that all sorts of Republican sources, all sorts of Democratic sources, it's implausible that only the Democratic sources would leak and the Republican sources would somehow be immune from leaking. And as you point out correctly, it turns out that they were probably into multiple Republican, at least one Republican, perhaps multiple Republican sources, but for one reason or another, never released the material.
And let me go back just for a moment to you on this, Glenn Carroll. But actually, I'd like to ask you, how would you feel if it was still an agent in the field now?
How would I feel if I were still an agent in the field? The agency generally feels that our mission, and this is correct, is to do the hard and sometimes nasty jobs. And then when things go wrong, unfortunately, we are left holding the bag. That's sort of a standard cynical or fatalistic, I guess is a better word, perspective that agency officers have. In this instance, though, it's a far different circumstance where we always assume that foreign countries will conduct espionage against the United States. That's just the reality of affairs. To do so at a level that directly affects the election, as the other speaker very clearly laid out, is a whole different order of crisis. Now, how the agency would feel to have reported on some of this and then to be dismissed as a hostile party, well, this is what led to my reaction that you raised a moment ago about it being an existential challenge. Frankly, I was seized with the issues, as many other intelligence officers were, I'm sure, over a year ago, simply watching the campaign and seeing the vulnerabilities, the crying, shocking vulnerabilities that Donald Trump positions and he as an individual presented for exploitation by foreign intelligence. And then to have those concerns dismissed as somehow partisan is disturbing. But what else can one do but try to fulfill one's oath, which is to preserve and protect the Constitution rather than an individual? So it's a huge dilemma.
Well, Glenn Carroll, let me thank you for joining us. Glenn Carroll, again, former CIA officer and interrogator, joining us this morning. And here's an ironic comment from a listener named Sean, who says the CIA complaining about a foreign government influencing our elections to impose a right-wing leader is hilarious, ironic, and lacks complete self-awareness considering our history of doing this very thing to Latin America and the Middle East during the Cold War. Maybe we should accept our bitter medicine and see this as a lesson. Let me bring another caller into this. And that's Dave. You're on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm cutting in a little late. I missed some of the talk, but the New Yorker, even the Atlantic, a number of magazines have actually maintained the course, maybe along with Charles Blow from the New York Times, that what a danger, what an incompetent danger this Trump guy is, and I just don't understand. It seems like we're in an alternate universe. That the press may, even NPR, isn't separating this guy out. I think the elections need to be, with Russian involvement, you gotta forget him coming into office January 20th. It's gotta be put off. And I don't understand. I mean, I'd love some comments in regard to that.
Well, actually, there's a tweet here I'm looking at in regard to what you're saying, Dave. Joyce says, "We the people call for a do-over. Outrageous. Trump tipped his hand several times during the election. No one listened."
Yeah, sure. I mean, I again, I mean, this look, I don't want to go into the level of paranoia, but I'm a Holocaust survivor's son. This was Hitler in 1922. I don't see the difference. And I'm an educated guy, and most of my friends think some switch has been pulled, and we're in some weird alternate universe. He's got us all trumped.
Let me thank you for the call, because I want to go back actually to Ambassador Michael McFaul, who's with us this hour as well, this half hour as well. There is a sense that Trump is doing something not necessarily along these demagogic or tyrannical or authoritarian lines, that he just wants to combine diplomacy and business. The Tillerson possible nomination as Secretary of State brings that to bear as well. Some thoughts from you on that, Michael McFaul?
Well, I'll get to that in a minute, but I just wanted to make your last caller aware that there is a letter circulating right now. It's a letter from a group of electors from the Electoral College to DNI Clapper seeking information about Russia's interference in the election prior to the Electoral College vote on December 19th. And as soon as we get off this show, I'll put it on Twitter, at McFaul, and you can read the letter. I don't know the content. I just got it while we were sitting here. But just so your caller knows that there are people that share his concerns as well.
There was an electoral, a member of the Electoral College who already said that he is not going to cast a vote for Donald Trump, a Republican member of the Electoral College, though I don't know if he specifically alluded to Russia in that decision.
But yeah, this literally just came on my screen 10 minutes ago. So this is something new. With respect to your other question, I mean, my own view is, you know, I look at this as, and I know the previous caller would disagree with me, but I look at this like a sporting analogy, right? We had a game, there was a winner. Afterwards, there's been some investigation of some questionable calls. People need to look at the tape. Even fines need to be given out. But we can't reverse the electoral outcome because of those violations during the game. I think that would just create a constitutional crisis that we couldn't handle. But we do have to think about 2020. And we do have to think about how to constrain, let me not say the word constrain, but how to deal with this Russian threat moving forward. And again, that's the only way I think you can do that is with this commission that we've been talking about. Now, with respect to your exact question, of course, Donald Trump wants to combine business and diplomacy. What else does he know? I mean, with all due respect to the president-elect, he's been a businessman forever. That's been his profession. He's going to look through questions of foreign policy through that lens. I think that's a prediction that most would agree with. And I also think it is incumbent upon others that are joining his administration, the U.S. Congress, the media, and, professors like myself to watch closely what he does and to engage with him on issues that we could support him on and to try to constrain him on ideas that we think are bad for American national interest. That, to me, is the agenda moving forward.
And let me move forward with another caller. Peggy joins us next. Peggy, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Quick comment and a question. I was alarmed during the campaign by Hillary Clinton's aggressive attitude toward Russia, and the only bright spot I see in this presidency is that he seems to want better relations with Russia, and I personally think that is a good thing, given the situation in the Middle East.
Excuse me, at the same time that we're having probably worse relations with China, one has to add.
One has to add, yeah. Yes. But the thing about the thing that I wanted to bring out was that when you read the accounts, the intelligence accounts of the Russian hacking, they always say, strongly suggest, we believe. So my question is there actually any hard proof that the Russian government was involved in the hacking? And I'll take my answer off the
air. All right, thank you for that. Again, I'm going to defer to Martin Lubicki on this. Martin Lubicki?
Well, you're not going to find anybody's fingerprints. You're not going to find gunpowder residues. That's not the way life works in cyberspace, right? It's all going to be some sort of circumstantial evidence. The two groups that we're talking about have done multiple hacks over multiple years, and you can start correlating their methods, the address, the internet protocol addresses they use, the type of malware they use, the kind of keyboards they use, their basic modus operandi, so that when you go to a particular case and you say, well, it looks like it and it smells like this, and even though I don't have the duck in front of me, yeah, I'm pretty certain that that's that particular kind of duck, okay? I mean, I think somebody had mentioned in a tweet catching people red-handed. Well, you can't catch people red-handed in cyberspace. These folks are sitting in overseas somewhere, and our standard for what constitutes adequate proof in cyberspace, because it's a different medium, is going to look a lot different than it does with, say, street crime.
Michael, and so it's can I all... get on?
Yeah.
Could I jump in on this? I actually
it's
disagree. I think that's not true in this case. I would just encourage everybody to go read the report that CrowdStrike put out over the summer, as you alluded to before. I think the evidence is overwhelming. And we don't have the access to what our intelligence agencies do, but this is a private company. It's a detailed report, 30-page report. You can't read that report and think that the evidence is not overwhelming that it was the Russians.
Now, if it is overwhelming, I'm wondering, I'm looking at a tweet here from a listener. I have to bring it in because you made the sports analogy and you said we have to accept the calls. And this listener says, how about doping and taking away the medals? Just extending on your metaphor somewhere.
Well, that was very clever. Very clever tweet. Here's the other piece of this. I want to be clear. I don't want to be flippant about it. We can figure out, in my view, whether the Russians intervened in our election. I think we can figure that out, by the way, without even knowing their intent. You can look at consequences without intent. We in the social sciences do that all the time. That's our profession. What I think will be more difficult was to isolate what we would call that independent variable, right? That one factor, to say that as a result of the Russian interference, Donald Trump won the election. That is a much harder social science question because, of course, there were dozens of factors involved in why the election went one way or the other. And to isolate the specific causal influence of the Russians and to say, well, if not for that, he wouldn't have won. I think that's a much harder task, and that would be, you can't prove that without a doubt. And therefore, I don't want to have a debate about who's the next president, but I do want to have a debate about how we're going to preserve our electoral process so that we have a free and fair election in 2020.
Want to weigh in here, Martin Lubicki?
Yeah, I think it's a question about what is legitimate interference and what is not legitimate interference, okay? During the Brexit vote, President Obama says he supports Britain staying in the common market, in the European community, okay? Nobody considered that illegitimate interference. What the Russians did has been considered illegitimate interference. I think if we're going to have established global norms on what's considered responsible state behavior or whatever, we've got to be very careful about specifying what it was about Russian actions that we find constitutes an unacceptable actions. I don't think that's an impossible problem, okay? A lot of it has to do with the fact that in order to get the kind of information they used, they conducted cyber espionage, which is a crime in pretty much every country around the world, including Russia and China, okay? Now, all countries conduct cyber espionage. The difference between us and the Russians is that when we conduct cyber espionage, we handle it in a professional manner. That is to say, it becomes part of the national security apparatus. It stays within the national security apparatus. It is used as intelligence to inform decision-making. When the Russians, in this case, went into the DNC and the other emails that they went into, they used it in a manner that we don't use it as, okay? They used it basically for political interference. And I think that is the basis on which we can start discussing and establishing global norms about what can and cannot be done with cyber espionage.
I have to bring another tack in here and go to Ambassador McFaul because I just mentioned China when that caller called in and talked about perhaps better relations with Russia and said that things look a lot more from the other side, darker at this point where China's concerned. And they've actually, this is news just in, Michael McFaul, they've warned that it is that China, that is, quote, seriously concerned after President-elect Donald Trump questioned whether the United States should keep its longstanding position that Taiwan is part of one China. This is almost inevitable, but seriously concerned is kind of serious rhetoric, isn't it?
It's very serious. They're dead serious about and very alarmed by his questioning the one China policy. He seemed to imply in his interview yesterday on Fox that he wanted to use the ambiguity about our one China policy for leverage in terms of some other negotiations with the Chinese. And that's just not the way they negotiate. I mean, I don't think that strategy is going to work. And to the point of the earlier caller, I also want to agree with her that I would prefer for the United States to have good relations with Russia. I'm not against that. I worked towards that when I was in the government. But the question cannot be, the goal cannot be good relations with Russia. The goal has to be something that's in our national interest. And then the means to do it is to engage and talk with President Putin.
Is it in our national interest to go along with Putin, essentially, where Syria is concerned? Because I think that seems to be part of Trump's map in his head. He doesn't want to remove Assad. He wants to keep him in power. Obama wanted to remove him.
Exactly. Which is to say, I can imagine that first meeting between the two presidents. I was at the first one that Obama had with Medvedev. And Putin's going to say, here's my price for good relations. First, stop supporting the Ukrainians. Let us do what we need to do in eastern Ukraine. Recognize Crimea. Support us in Syria. And then, you know what? I'll say that you're a great guy and we'll have good relations. That's not a good deal. To use the language of President-elect Trump, that's not a good deal. That's a bad deal. What he does need to do instead is to say, here are the three things I want from Russia. And in return, you know, I'll engage with you to achieve these things.
More of your calls. Let me go to Chris next. Chris, thank you for waiting. Join us.
Yes. I'd like to know the pros and cons of a whistleblower law that would allow intelligence community to talk directly to the people, the committees in Congress, and secondly, whether that type of law could be passed.
Yeah, what do you think, Martin Lubicki?
I think you have to respect the fact that a lot of the stuff that the whistleblowers are going to talk about is classified, so you have to be able to handle it within the channels that allow for classified. I mean, there are protections within existing law that allow whistleblowers to blow their whistles. And I'm not entirely certain that we're going to need new legislation here.
I'm going to read a comment here from Richard, who writes, isn't Trump's response about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction flawed? Wasn't the conclusion about WMDs coming from the White House and Cheney? It was Colin Powell who went to the CIA to gather the information and make the argument at the United Nations. And a tweet from Kenneth, who says, would any of the proposed investigations include the role that James Comey and the FBI played in the final days of the election? Also, a comment from one more comment. That tweet, Kenneth. Let me go to Kenneth's tweet to you, Michael McFaul.
Well, two things there. One is, with respect to the past use of intelligence, I think we're oversimplifying what happened during the Bush administration. There were lots of good people. I know some of them from my previous work in the government that had a radically different view about that intelligence and the politicization of it or not. That's a huge issue. That's number one. Number two, just because a mistake was made back then, is that we're now going to never use intelligence moving forward? You know, nobody, I think, would sign up for that. But number three, I think the point about Comey and the FBI and generally is why you need an independent bipartisan commission. You need other people to look at both the executive branch and to be independent from the partisan politics of the U.S. Congress to look at everything. And I don't think you're going to get that with a internal review like the Obama administration is doing or with hearings which will last 2 or 3 hours and then we'll all move on. I think this is a serious national security threat and it demands a serious attention, maybe not on the scale of the 911 commission, but on the kind of parameters that they had to look at all these things. And by the way, that would help you get at your previous caller's point about a whistleblower law, that they would have subpoena authority, they would have clearances, they could look at all that intelligence in a way that you're not going to get in these other modalities.
I want to read a few more comments, some pushback from Philip, who says, this all sounds like disgruntled left-wing speculations, still not accepting the results of the election. Very inflammatory and not helpful going forward. To suggest Trump and Tillerson are somehow sympathetic to Putin is insane. You should be more concerned about the content of the hacked emails. And Paul writes, I do not understand the demonization of Russia, even given the vast shortcomings of Putin's behavior. Wouldn't a better relationship with Russia be a good outcome? And another listener writes, we should examine the history of election influence, what the involvement of the CIA has been within Russian elections or elections in other countries, such that this might be a revenge action, and how this recent event fills into a wider context. So we've only got a couple minutes left here, but some very good questions being raised by listeners. Let me bring Eric on next, who's joining us from Guerneville. Eric, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, my question is about Trump being maybe crazy like a fox and drill maybe drill. Be looking at Tillerson for possibly Arctic and Kazakhstan fossil fuel reserves and et cetera, because I know Tillerson has been in discussion with Russia about contracts for oil and gas.
Quick response. We've got 90 seconds left.
They haven't been just in conversation. They signed an agreement in 2011 precisely to do that in the Arctic. It's a deal that at the time they were estimating would be worth $300 billion. So that's ExxonMobil. That wouldn't be Secretary of State Tillerson necessarily. But most certainly that would be part of the agenda moving forward.
I want to also mention that Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, a lot of people are asking about the Democrats and what can the Democrats do and so forth. He said today that FBI Director James Comey was, quote, heavily involved as a partisan in the weeks leading up to the election, and that Comey's actions handed the presidency to Donald Trump. And finally, here's Nikos, who says, this is a crisis, a national security crisis, the likes of which we've never seen. People want to know what we can do. I've called my congressional representatives. We in California feel powerless. On that note of powerlessness, we're going to have to conclude. Let me thank Michael McFaul, again, director of the Friedman Spogli Institute for International Studies and former U.S. ambassador to Russia, and Martin Lubicki, who is also distinguished visiting professor at the U.S. Naval Academy and author of Cyberspace in Peace and War. We were also joined by NPR's Mary Louise Kelly and former CIA officer Glenn Carl. When we return, we're going to actually find out all about a single performance by a woman named Echo Brook, and stay tuned for that.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.